I'm Willem Cook, and this is the Top of Mind podcast, where we explore what is on the top of everybody's mind. Well, maybe just my mind. On today's episode, we are going to talk about what makes a good death. Death is something people don't want to talk about. But as I have learned, it is really important to destigmatize talking about death. I think young people don't talk about it because it's not relevant to them. And perhaps older people don't talk about it because it scares them. But it's very important to remember that nobody makes it out alive. And it's better to be prepared for it than have a death come as a surprise. I asked Linda Hossetler, the only social worker in Toronto who specializes in death and dying, is there such thing as a good death?
I can tell you the story of my cat and how she died, because her death was one of the first ones I saw up close, and it really, in my mind, is a lot about how I hope to die one day. I think my cat had one of the best deaths I've ever seen, and I've watched hundreds of people die at this point in my career. But my cat was aging. We all knew she was getting old. We all knew she was getting close to dying. And we were making it easy for her. We were making sure she had good food she liked. And then finally one weekend, we knew this is it. We didn't take her to the vet. She didn't go to the vet at all in her final year. We never knew what she died of. She never had a diagnosis. We just knew she was dying. And then the final weekend, she couldn't walk up the stairs anymore. We had to carry her. We laid her in on the floor in the living room. We fed her her favorite food. We used a little spoon to feed her and give her water. And then at the very end of that night, we knew her breathing was hard and she wasn't going to make it through the night. So we all talked about it as a family. We gathered round. We all told her we loved her. We whispered in her ear and said, "You can go. Goodbye." And the next morning we came downstairs and she had died through the night. And so we went outside as a family. We had a little ceremony. We put her in the ground and buried her in our backyard. So she's still kind of with us. We put a tree on top. And so I think it's the idea that she didn't have a lot of medical interventions at the end. She didn't have appointments. She just had lots of love from her family. And those are the pieces that I hope I get when I die, because that to me is what I would consider a good death.
Jenna Winkle works as a nurse in an ICU and deals with deaths every day. These are the components that she thought made a good death.
Well, first, I think the understanding that everyone kind of needs something different, and every family and every experience is going to be different. So what works for one family or community is not going to be the same for the other. And I think that if the family can decide to kind of respect the wishes and do their best to honor what the patient would want or what they have verbally or have previously communicated, if everyone is kind of on the same page and people can get out of their own heads about what they personally need mm-hmm. in the situation and just honor the actual person, I think that that comes to be in their best interest. I think that makes for a better death.
In order to honor the patient's wishes, you have to know what they are. Linda thinks the key to that is communication.
I think one of the things is people have a lot of fear. They have a lot of fear, and then they think that by avoiding the topic, it'll be better. And instead, I encourage people to talk about what they're afraid of, talk about the good things, talk about what's happening, see death. I really believe that if you keep your eyes open, you know when death is coming, and hopefully you can talk about death. I love quoting Dr. Ira Byock, who wrote a book about the four things that matter most, and he encourages families to say to each other before death four different things, four phrases. They are, please forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. And those are opportunities at any point in life that you can say how much people, how much you love them. And one of the things that helps a lot at the end is if you feel like you've been able to say and express love to each other, so that when you're left and the person is gone, then you can actually be left with all the sadness of that person being dead and gone, but at the same time you have a lot of love and you have a lot of memories of all the good stories and the things that were said, so that there's no regrets. It's really important that you that people understand that by talking about death, you can make sure that there's no regrets at the end. Everything's been said and you're ready for death.
Penny Rhodes works in hospice care with terminal patients approaching death.
The emotional part of a good death is being at peace with what's happening, mm-hmm. being at peace with the people around you. What can you do to prepare? To talk about it for sure. To plan what a person would like to have. You know, not everybody wants the same thing. And so that's real important because lots of people won't talk about death. And there's this poor person dying and nobody wants to talk about it. So to say, what I often say is, how would you like it to be? And very often nobody's asked them that question.
Some people prepare for their death by thinking about what they want in the late stages of their life. This is what Linda Hossetler did.
First thing I've done is I've got all my affairs in order, and I'm only 56 years old, but I've got my health advanced care plan made. My wishes are written down. I've shared them with my family. Everyone knows what I want. They know that I don't want lots of interventions. If I can't leave the hospital, I don't want any more interventions. I don't want feeding tubes. I don't want breathing tubes. I want to make sure that I have lots of people around me. I don't want to be lonely. I'd like to be at home as much as possible. At a certain point, I plan to just stop eating because I think we often eat and drink too long. And if you stop eating and drinking, it's not against the law and you can simply make the ending much faster and just let yourself go. And I hope that by doing so, I can have a clear mind and be able to talk with my family and loved ones and have as many of them as around me as much as possible.
There is a number of legal documents associated with dying that many people don't think about, but it is very important to not leave them to the end and have a big scramble to get them all finished. Jenna Winkle talks more on the subject.
Something big that we would ask people would be a living will, and that's kind of the main one, or like a power of attorney, and there's a different couple types of power of attorneys, but the main one that we would be concerned with in the hospital would be a medical power of attorney.
Yeah.
So that's not the same person that's going to handle your finances. That's someone that is designated like to make medical decisions. And typically, if this would be a family unit, typically those are way two different personalities. Like the same person that can handle your money is not the same person that can handle your death. So a living will, I think, is a notarized document, but that just is that's a document that's going to state like what type of measures you want to keep you alive. And some people will say yes to everything. So they'll say yes to like CPR and a breathing tube and a feeding tube and any type of life-saving extraordinary measures. And then some people can pick and choose. They say, I might want antibiotics at the end of my life. I might not. And then some people will say no to everything. That's also part of like, if you can have that discussion with your family or with someone that would be making the decision for you, that's a good one to remember.
If you're interested in learning about death or preparing for your own, you can attend a death cafe.
Every couple of months, I go to a local bar and I host a death cafe. I hosted it earlier this week. I've done about 20, 22, I think maybe right now. And about 30 people come out of all different ages, from like 18 all the way up to 80. And it's just the public, and we come out and people just talk about death and dying, and there's no agenda. And sometimes people tell stories, sometimes people ask questions, sometimes people want to argue about existential kind of, you know, where do we go when we die? Mm-hmm. And there's no agenda, and there's different topics every time. But it's part of a global movement called Death Cafe, and I'm super happy to be a part of it, and getting people of all ages to talk about death in a very casual kind of setting. For us, it's over a beer. It can also be with coffee and tea, but the idea is it's just hanging out together talking about death.
Overall, I think that it is very important to make dying something we talk about more frequently. That way, it becomes a more natural thing, so when the time comes and you start to pass away, it's less of a surprise and your death feels more natural. We all have different hopes for how we die and different wishes for the process. In the words of Anna from Sydney Hopkins' novel, being dead was nothing to get fussed about. Dying could be a bit of a problem, but not if you had really lived. Dying needed a certain amount of preparation, and the only preparation for dying was real living. This is the Top of Mind podcast. I'm Willem Koo. Thank you for listening. See you next time.